Good evening and welcome to City Visions. I'm your host, Ethan Elkind. Now that the historic midterms are over, it's time to ask, what's next? When the 116th Congress convenes in January, it will be a Congress divided. Democrats convincingly won back the House, flipping nearly 40 seats once the votes are all counted. The Senate, however, remains in Republican control, as does, of course, the White House. Now, California will be sending 53 representatives to Congress, the largest delegation in the nation. And of those 53, only 7 are now Republican. Even one solidly Republican Orange County is sending an all-Democrat delegation to Congress. So an air of expectation and hope for change seems to have inspired the outpouring during the midterms. But will our elected representatives be able to deliver? What can we expect during the first 100 days of Congress? What role will California have in setting the legislative agenda? To discuss these issues and more, tonight I'm pleased to be joined on the phone by Democratic Representatives Anna Eshoo and Jared Huffman. Now, Representative Anna Eshoo represents the 18th District, which covers San Mateo, Santa Clara, and Santa Cruz counties, including Silicon Valley. She's been a member of Congress since 1993 and serves as a senior member of the House Energy and Commerce Committee. Welcome, Congresswoman Eshoo.
Thank you. Terrific to be with you.
Glad you can join us. And we're also joined, as I mentioned, by Congressman Jared Huffman, who represents the 2nd Congressional District, which runs along the coastline from Marin County to the border of Oregon. Congressman Huffman has served in Congress since 2013 and serves on the Committee on Natural Resources and the House Committee on Transportation and Infrastructure. Welcome, Congressman Huffman.
Great to be with you and my friend Anna Eshoo.
Yeah, and also
thank you, Jared.
And welcome back, Congressman Huffman, to City Visions as well. And from the Northgate Studios at Berkeley School of Journalism, we're pleased to be joined by Professor Eric Schickler. Professor Schickler is a Jeffrey and Ashley McDermott Professor of Political Science, an expert on Congress. He's won the Richard F. Fenno Prize for his study of legislative politics and the Woodrow Wilson Prize for Best Book on Government and Politics. Welcome, Professor Schickler.
Great to be here. Thank you.
And, of course, we hope you will join us for the conversation. We open the phone lines in 20 minutes. You can call us at 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. Or you can email us now at cityvisions@kalw.org. And you can also reach us by tweeting us at cityvisionskalw. So, Congresswoman Eshoo, let me start with you. I know we'll only have you to the halfway point of the hour, so I wanted to dive right in with you. What are the legislative priorities that these new Congress members essentially ran on and will be prioritizing once the Congress convenes in January?
Well, there are several, Ethan. We're going to start out, I believe, the very first package of bills that will be passed by the House, presented to the House and passed by the House, is a very broad ethics package, which the Democrats feel very strongly about, and I certainly agree. Secondly, I think that, you know, there is a direct relationship between campaigns and legislating. The Democrats made several promises relative to health care to strengthen the Affordable Care Act. The first word in that law is affordable. So we have some work to do because of the damage that the administration has done to the Affordable Care Act. We also will pursue lowering the cost of prescription drugs. We know that the United States of America is the only industrialized nation in the world that has the horrendous statistics relative to gun violence. And so we need to be closing loopholes, strengthening the background check system. That is another priority. And I hope that that can be bipartisan, healthcare as well. Another very important issue for our country is infrastructure. The National organization of engineers has rated the condition of America's infrastructure as either D plus or D minus, and that's not acceptable for our country. So I think that this is another area where we can we can put together not only necessary legislation, but that it be bipartisan. And broadband needs to be part of our national infrastructure package as well, because today there is at least one-third of Americans that have no broadband whatsoever, or even by the government's rating relative to speed, it doesn't even meet that standard. And this is in many areas, certainly in some areas in my district, believe it or not, certainly in Congressman Huffman's, and in rural areas across the country. So we've got a big job to do there. Mm-hmm. We also have the responsibility, Congress also always has the responsibility to do oversight. And so I think that there are many areas that that the new Congress, the House, will undertake to make sure that the executive branch and those the people that are running the various agencies are doing it effectively, that they're doing it honestly, and report that back to the American people. So we have a great deal to do, and I'm very much looking forward to it, because it is it's exciting. It's an exciting time. It was a historic election. I think the American people spoke pretty loudly about wanting a course change in our country. I think they want to see the Congress work. We do have divided government, but it's not the first time that we've had it. And I believe that there are opportunities for people on both sides of the aisle. So I'm very excited about it. I'm excited about this new class that has come in. The first time in American history that we have over 100 women in the House of Representatives. And that isn't an accident. These very fine candidates were recruited. We all worked hard to see that they could make it over the finish line. As I look over my shoulder, I'm very, very grateful for not only the outcome of the election, but I think it's really rather stunning when it's being reported that it's the single largest turnout of voters in a midterm election in the history of our country. So the American people made history, now they want us to govern. And it's up to us to produce legislation that is relevant to people in their day-to-day lives, where what is in their wallet or what they need to have in their wallet is met, as well as the issues that have not been tended to, that we actually not only introduce legislation but pass it.
So a lot's to look forward to come January with this new Congress, and I appreciate you citing a number of the key priorities. And I should mention for listeners, since you mentioned the Affordable Care Act, that the deadline to sign up for coverage under the Affordable Care Act is December 15th, and the website to do so is healthcare.gov. Well, Congressman Huffman, I want to go to you. So we heard Congressman Eshoo outline a whole bunch of priorities and also the new different look to this class coming in. Do you want to add to that list, or anything in addition that you want to flag for listeners that you expect to happen come the convening of this new Congress next month?
Anna gave a terrific overview of some of the policy priorities to expect from the new Congress. The only thing I would add to that is on the issue of immigration. This is probably not the Congress or the administration to do the kind of big comprehensive immigration reform that many of us would like, but I think the Democratic House is going to be very interested in at the very least, protecting the Dreamers and codifying the DACA program. So I think looking for action on that front early in the year. And we'll also be in position to push back against some of these aggressive anti-immigrant policies that we've seen from President Trump at the border. So one last issue, and it's a long list of issues that you've already heard, is climate change. Again, without the Senate and with this climate-denying administration in the White House, it's going to be very difficult to take the kind of big, bold action we need. Nevertheless, I think many members of this new Congress in the House feel a great urgency. I certainly feel it. And so we're going to get started on putting forward big, bold ideas on clean energy, on other climate solutions to get our national government back into a leadership posture on what I think many of us believe is the most important issue of our time.
And Congressman Huffman, are there any particular bills that you've sponsored or authored that you'd like to see make it to the floor right away in addition to these priorities?
Well, certainly on the infrastructure piece that Anna Eshoo summarized, I've sponsored several bills to expand broadband access, my New Deal broadband bill, my public lands broadband bill. These are pieces, I think, of the infrastructure solution. We've also got to find a way to decarbonize our economy. And I think beginning to put a price on carbon, I've proposed a life cycle carbon fee to replace the gas tax for the Federal Highway Trust Fund. There may be other ideas, but we're going to continue to see declining revenues from the gas tax as vehicles become more efficient and we see a different fuel mix and more electrification. So we're going to need to make changes there if we're going to continue to fund our transportation infrastructure. While we're making those changes, we should do it in a way that sends price signals that help us decarbonize.
And Congressman Eshoo, just back to you, you mentioned doing things in a bipartisan way. Obviously, the Democrats are only going to be controlling, you know, one half of the congressional branch of government. How realistic is it that there's going to be progress on these issues that you mentioned? Because you'd have to bring the Senate on board, the majority of the Senate, or perhaps in some cases a supermajority if the filibuster is invoked, and then you'd have to get the president to sign legislation. So are there areas that you've mentioned there where you really do believe there's the ability to make progress going forward with a divided government?
Well, infrastructure has traditionally always been bipartisan. I mean, from my early days in the House of Representatives, there were maybe a handful that would vote against a transportation bill. So I think that that there is promise there. I'm not saying it's a certainty, but I think it does hold out promise because an infrastructure bill is it employs the American worker. It is the benefits are felt in every community. We use American products, and so it's like lining up five cherries on the machine. It's a win-win-win-win across the board.
And for the Bay Area,
and I think don't underestimate good ideas catching on. Everything is shouldn't be tagged as simply a Democratic idea, a Republican idea, and not be able to come together. So I'm going to move forward with a sense of hope that we can build and do the right thing. Now, if the Republicans in the House don't want to come along, if the Republicans in the Senate don't want to come along, you know what? It's their constituents and the American people that are the losers in this. So I think that good ideas are contagious.
And Congresswoman Eshoo, on the subject of infrastructure, are there any specific projects that you think would be helped by federal funding right here in the Bay Area that our local listeners here could expect to see benefits from if there is a compromise reached on infrastructure?
Certainly. Two items that come to mind is the electrification of Caltrain, which is really the spine of our transportation system. From San Francisco to San Jose and south of San Jose as well. I was able to, with the help of all of my my friends and colleagues, to secure the early funding for that. But we want to make sure that this project is completed. It will be faster. It will be cleaner. There will be the old diesel cars will go, and so again, this is a real win across the board. I think that we also need to not only study but move forward with another Bay Crossing, and so I think that that will help to alleviate the horrific traffic jams that we have now. And I can just start with my own district office staff. Most of them live in the East Bay. It takes them hours to travel 12 or 15 miles. So I think that that's another one where it could be a real win for the Bay Area. Mm-hmm.
And same question, Congressman mm-hmm. Huffman, for you, where you see that there actually is a realistic chance of bipartisan progress on some of the issues we've talked about here.
Well, sure. I agree with Ann Ashew on infrastructure, and I am certain that there's going to be a big, bold infrastructure package that comes out of the House, and it's going to be hard for Republicans to explain if they choose not to support it. To give you a couple of priorities in my part of this conversation in the North Bay, the smart rail system needs to be continued further north to Healdsburg and Cloverdale and hopefully even beyond that. We have come a long way, mostly with local funding, on building a brand new passenger rail system. You don't see that every day, but we've done it in the North Bay. We need some federal help to expand and grow that very successful system. And Highway 37, which is a critical artery in the North Bay, is basically at sea level and is going to be one of the first pieces of highway threatened by sea level rise. We are running out of time to find a solution. It's going to be expensive. So those are just two examples of local priorities.
And before we delve into some of the issues that you've raised and others that I'm sure callers are going to want to bring up as well, I have to ask, is Nancy Pelosi going to be the Speaker of the House come January? So, Representative Ashew, let me start with you for your take on
that. I believe so. Yes, she will be. It's a fascinating topic of discussion. She doesn't have any opponent, and she is proven effective leader, and that's what we need. This is about our country. This is all about our country, and the people of this country expect us to govern and to govern well and to govern sensibly. And so she is truly the moderating force in a caucus that is highly diverse. And so I'm excited about her becoming speaker again. She's always done the right thing by the country, even in the toughest times when our economy was near collapse. She insisted that every member, I remember her saying at a caucus, my colleagues, the American people sent us here to do a job. And some of us may lose our seats. Maybe many of us will lose our seats, but we have to do the right thing for the country. It was the right thing. It was her leadership. It was her leadership that produced the Affordable Care Act. There's a very, very long list of landmark legislation that stands as very, very tall in terms of her proven and effective record. So, yes, she will be Speaker.
And Congressman Huffman, same question for you, and also just to note that there has been criticism that there hasn't been enough newer voices brought in to the leadership across the board in the House on the Democratic side. So interested in both your perspectives on Nancy Pelosi's mm-hmm. potential as Speaker, but also bringing in new voices to leadership.
Well, I am very confident that Nancy Pelosi is going to be our Speaker. And on the new leadership issue, as much as anyone in the House, I want to see us begin the process of elevating a new generation of leaders. I consider myself to be part of that next generation. I believe it or not, at 54 years old, I'm what passes for somewhat young in the United States Congress. And I'm eager to see some of my peers elevated into positions of leadership. That has begun. We just had leadership elections in the Democratic caucus last week. Our new caucus chair is a dynamic young African-American, Hakeem Jeffries from New York. Our new assistant majority leader, Benray Lujan from New Mexico, is phenomenal. He's 44 years old, so he's even younger than myself and Hakeem. You have Catherine Clark as the assistant Democratic caucus chair from Massachusetts. She's kind of our same generation, and Sherry Bustos will be the new head of the DCCC. So we're not only seeing this next generation of folks now being nurtured and elevated into that next rung of leadership, but you're also seeing incredible diversity and talent stepping forward. So I'm excited, and I think the country is going to be excited.
All right. Well, we'll find out come January how that all shakes out. And this is City Visions on local public radio, 91.7 KALW San Francisco, and on the web at KALW.org. Our guests tonight are Anna Eshoo, Democratic Congresswoman from the 18th Congressional District, covering San Mateo, Santa Clara, and Santa Cruz counties, and she's served in Congress since 1993. We're also joined by Jared Huffman, Democratic Congressman since 2013 for the 2nd Congressional District, stretching from Marin to the Oregon border. And we're also joined by Eric Schickler, McDermott Professor of Political Science at UC Berkeley, who specializes in Congress. So we invite you to call in with questions or comments for our panel. What should Congress be focused on when it convenes in January? Should Democrats impeach Donald Trump? The number to call to join this conversation is 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-TALK. You can also email or text us at cityvisions@kalw.org or post a comment on kalw.org or on our Facebook page. And you can also reach us on Twitter by using at cityvisionskalw. Well, Eric Schickler, I've had you on standby, but I wanted to give you an opportunity to weigh into this discussion. What do you see in terms of the prospects for bipartisanship and progress on some of these issues that we've talked about here in the first 20 minutes of the show?
Well, I would agree with both Congressman Huffman and Congresswoman Eshoo that infrastructure is one issue where there is the possibility for bipartisanship and legislation to be enacted. But I think for the most part, the real opportunity for Democrats is to try to lay out a concrete agenda that would pass the House and lay down markers really for the future of the Democratic Party and the future of the country, something for, say, Democratic presidential candidates to run on in 2020. So, for example, you know, major substantial legislation on climate change, immigration, health care, and voting rights, which is the one issue that hasn't come up so far, I think all of those are going to be high priorities in 2020. And all of those are issues where it's going to be very hard to get significant Republican support or Donald Trump to ever sign on to legislation that Democrats would propose. But I actually think that articulating and passing a strong agenda on those issues is going to be something that Democratic voters are going to be really looking for.
Mm-hmm. And I have a email question from Peter in the East Bay who asks that given that the Senate has the ability to confirm or reject judicial nominations. Is there anything that the Democrats in the U.S. House can do to, even though they're left out of the process constitutionally, to influence how the Senate deals with judges? And Congressman Eshoo, let me direct that to you. Is there any leverage that the House members have over the Senate process?
I can't think of something really off the top of my head. As you said, constitutionally, it's the Senate is granted advice and consent. It is one area of this administration where they have not missed a beat. They have brought forward their names from the Federalist Society, and they, on a continuing basis, and they have the votes to put so many federal judges in place. And maybe Jared has an idea about it, but this is something that that rests with the administration, and it is a Republican Senate. I think that the vetting of individuals is something, a responsibility that belongs to every senator. And so I would think that the Democratic side would vet people very carefully, and there's no question that in a conservative administration, they get to put their choices forward. In Democratic administrations, that changes. But I don't know if Jared has any additional ideas,
yeah.
But I wanted to just go back and second the motion, so to speak, on immigration and climate change and on voting rights. We plan to, we have bipartisan legislation right now, but the Speaker would not allow that bipartisan legislation to be brought to the floor to be added to the Voting Rights Act. We saw in this just ended midterm election where there was voter suppression, and that's seems to be in the DNA of some of the southern states, but it is so un-American. And so we look forward to passing a reformed Voting Rights Act in the House. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad that it was raised.
And let me turn that same question then over to Representative Huffman. Mm-hmm. Thoughts on leverage, maybe in budget negotiations or something with the Senate where you could influence the judicial confirmation process?
Yes. So just to chime in that, I agree with Anna. We do not have a vote. We do not have constitutional advice and consent authority. But we do have a platform, and many of us felt compelled to express opinions on Judge Kavanaugh. That's part of, I think, our leadership responsibility here. Anna Eshoo did it better than anyone because her constituent was Christine Blasey Ford, and she was one of the first to hear those stories, to pass them along to folks in the United States Senate so that they could be part of the confirmation process, and I think that was a great service. But we are limited to actions like that. And then on the voting rights piece, I do expect voting rights will be part of this kind of big H.R. 1 reform bill that Democrats introduce as our first piece of legislation, in addition to ethics and campaign finance reform. It'll all be wrapped up in I think, a very big reform bill.
Mm-hmm. All right, and we have a question in from Martin in San Francisco who wanted to share a comment. You can't impeach Trump, says Martin, because Mike Pence is just as frightening. I don't know how we will tolerate two more years of either of them, but impeachment is not the answer. And I guess it was inevitable we would get a comment about impeachment. And, of course, we prompted that, too, at our 20-minute announcement. Congresswoman Eshoo, since you're leaving in just a few minutes, I wanted to give you a chance to weigh in on this question of impeachment and what the Democratic position is on this and what we could expect to see in this next Congress.
Well, I think that, number one, that the special counsel, Robert Mueller, and his investigation needs to be protected, that he cannot be fired. We have legislation on that, and it is absolutely critical that he be able to complete his investigation, turn it over to, as he is required to do, to the Department of Justice, and I think the Democrats will insist that report come to the Congress and be made public to the American people. There has been a real struggle with our Republican colleagues in on the whole issue of the special counsel. As one member, I want to see, I don't think it should be taken off the table, impeachment, but I also think that given the experience that I had going through impeachment, it tears the country apart. So you have to have the votes, but we need to have the report of the special counsel. And I had the privilege of serving for almost a decade on the House Intelligence Committee and worked with Robert Mueller when he was the director of the FBI. He is a straight arrow Republican, but above that, he's a true patriot. And he is skilled, and I think that what he comes forward with, the Congress will have to pay very special attention to.
And Congressman Huffman, do you have anything you wanted to add on this impeachment question? I'm sure you get it a lot.
Well, yes, just this, and I do sometimes hear, well, gosh, Mike Pence is, you know, so much more operational and threatening on the conservative agenda, and so therefore we have to stick with this, you know, relative buffoon of Donald Trump. I don't buy that. I believe if impeachable offenses have been committed, and if you've got the votes, and ideally if it's bipartisan, because I agree with Anna Eshoo, a partisan impeachment is very divisive for our country. But if all those elements are in place, you've got to move forward. You can't look at who is in the number two position and make a political calculation, because if you are giving someone a pass on impeachable offenses, the system's not working, and we don't have a rule of law. So I hope we never get to the point where we give anyone a pass on impeachable offenses.
All right. Well, we're coming up on halfway past the hour, and I want to bid farewell to Congresswoman Anna Eshoo. Thank you for joining us. She's a Democratic congresswoman from the 18th Congressional District, representing San Mateo, Santa Clara, and Santa Cruz counties, and including Silicon Valley. So, Congresswoman Eshoo, thank you so much for joining us here on City Vision.
Thank you, Ethan, and I look forward to joining you again, and thank you to my outstanding colleague, Jared Huffman. It's been a pleasure.
All right. Well, this is City Visions on local public radio, 91.7 KALW San Francisco, and on the web at KALW.org. Our guest tonight, we're, as you just heard, Congresswoman Anna Eshoo from the 18th Congressional District, who is now going to be leaving us, but we'll still have on the line Congressman Jared Huffman, Democratic congressman since 2013 for the 2nd Congressional District here in California, stretching from Marin County up to the Oregon border. And we're also joined by Eric Schickler, McDermott Professor of Political Science at UC Berkeley, who specializes in Congress. So we invite you to call in with questions or comments about what you think Congress should be focused on when it convenes in January. The number to call to join this conversation is 1-866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. You can also email or text us at cityvisions@kalw.org or post a comment on kalw.org or on our Facebook page. And you can also reach us on Twitter by using @CityVisionsKALW. Well, Professor Schickler, I wanted to give you an opportunity to weigh in on this question of impeachment and what you see as the prospects for that actually happening, given that you study Congress and given that there's a steep road, even if Democrats were on board with it in the House, to getting the president convicted in the Senate, given that you would need a two-thirds majority there. So what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think that the way that Democrats are likely thinking about this is that the first priority has to be to conduct serious oversight and support the Mueller investigation, back up, you know, essentially provide backing for the Mueller investigation such that it's clear to the Trump administration that if Donald Trump acts against Mueller, the Democratic House is going to be, you know, quite aggressive in trying to get Mueller's findings out there to the public and try to hold the president to account. I think where it becomes a real challenge for the Democrats is if Trump does take the kind of action that really strikes many people as a clear instance of abuse of power, obstruction of justice, where I think there'll be a rationale for impeachment. But unlike past cases, the prospects for getting any bipartisan support, I think, are going to be quite limited. And so you might well face a choice where impeachment seems to many people to be warranted. But as Congresswoman Eshoo pointed out, the concern about tearing the country apart will be so strong that I think many Democrats will hesitate. And I think that's, you know, if you think about the worst case scenario, it's essentially President Trump commits impeachable offenses. And yet, in the absence of any Republican support for moving forward, Democrats are, you know, essentially caught between their view of the Constitution and this kind of political reality.
And, you know, you mentioned oversight. So, Congressman Huffman, this was also mentioned by Congresswoman Eshoo as well. Oversight's going to be a big priority. Are there certain oversight investigative activities that you think are likely to be prioritized? I mean, what's the approach to coordinating oversight and using limited resources in the House to tackle different issues?
Well, you're going to see different committees pursue different priorities depending on the four corners of their jurisdiction. So, for example, I sit on the Natural Resources Committee, and there's no shortage of desperately needed oversight at the Department of Interior. Probably second only to Scott Pruitt's EPA, Interior has come to really represent the swamp that Donald Trump has created, all sorts of ethical lapses and scandals. You've got the Trump administration's own inspector general referring a couple of matters involving Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke to the Department of Justice for criminal investigation. So that's an example of the type of thing that you'll see from one committee. Over at the Judiciary Committee, I'm sure you'll see very different activities focused perhaps on the Department of Justice and on activities that might rise to the level of obstruction of justice. The House Intelligence Committee has got all kinds of cleanup work to do to go back to witnesses that were allowed to finish testimony without answering key questions, all sorts of leads that weren't followed because under Republican control, what passed for oversight was basically running interference for the Trump legal team.
Mm-hmm. And actually, you mentioned environmental committee that you sit on, and you earlier talked about climate change. And recently, of course, the Trump administration rebuffed its own report on climate change from the National Climate Assessment that was congressionally mandated. And in fact, the White House spokesperson Sarah Sanders described their own report as extreme and not based on facts. So, Congressman Huffman, what do you see as on the legislative agenda to address climate change that might actually have a realistic chance of getting some bipartisan support?
Well, to give you one very specific example, for many years under the Clean Air Act, California has had a waiver to set higher standards for clean vehicles. And 13 other states have joined us now. So there's over a dozen so-called clean car states that believe we should continue to set very high standards. And they don't want the Trump administration to roll back the fuel economy standards as they have proposed to do. And if that goes forward, they want to be able to join California and move forward with even higher standards. This is really important for public health. It's really important, many of us believe, for continued innovation and success in the automobile industry. And it's critically important for meeting our climate goals, because the carbon impact of our electricity generation is coming down. We're making a lot of progress there. We have not made similar progress in the transportation sector, and raising these standards is the best way to start doing that. So there are Republicans in clean car states that have already joined me on letters, and I think could potentially join me on legislation or in other legislative activities to push back against the Trump administration, make sure we protect that ability for California and other clean car states to lead.
Well, I notice there's other policies, too, that could be an issue that would affect this exact issue of clean car standards, such as the tax credits that people can get for electric vehicles. Do you see that as something on the table to extend, particularly for companies like Tesla or General Motors, where the tax credit will be expiring?
I do, and in fact, I'm cautiously optimistic we'll get that taken care of here in the lame duck session, and it won't even be necessary for the next Congress to do it.
All right. So we'll monitor that over the next month. So we have an email question from Richard in San Francisco, who asks if Democrats are going to deal with the state and local tax deduction issue, which is part of the Republican tax bill that passed during the first year of the Trump administration. It seems like the deduction hurt Republican candidates in states like California and New Jersey. Will the GOP reconsider? So, Congressman Huffman, I'll give this one to you, and then I'd love to hear from Professor Schickler as well.
Well, you're right about the political ramification. Republicans who supported this tax scam to the detriment of their own state's taxpayers just got slaughtered in this midterm election. It was a wipeout. And the question now is, what can you do in the new Congress to change it? It's a lot harder to undo a tax cut than it is to oppose it in the first instance. So certainly I will try. We're going to have to try, because this tax action by the Republicans has blown a huge hole in the deficit. It's driving the debt up to record levels, and something's got to give. And we're certainly not going to finance it all by slashing benefits under Social Security and Medicare. But it is not a simple proposition to open up the tax code and begin raising a tax cut that went in a couple years ago. There are lots of things we can do to replace it, different kinds of middle-class tax relief that I think would be broadly popular, but we would have to pay for that by, you know, some other types of tax increases. Democrats would like to put those on some of those who made out the best under the Trump-Republican tax cut, but it's going to be it's a heavy lift.
And Professor Schickler, let me go to you with Richard's question there. What do you see as the prospects for further tax reform, given the politics of this issue, particularly the deductions for these state and local taxes?
I mean, I think that's an issue that likely would require unified Democratic control to really take concrete action on. Even in that situation, it's going to be relatively hard to change, because it's a matter of, you know, to restore that tax deduction, you're going to have to find ways to pay for it, either that or you'll be increasing the deficit, which so far Democrats have been more reluctant to do in terms of taxes than Republicans. I think just one point that's worth noting about taking away that deduction is it was a pretty unusual thing that Republicans did, where they basically, in this massive tax cut, they targeted who's going to pay for it to states that were generally blue states, Democratic-leaning states, even though some of those states did have a number of Republican members of Congress. And as we saw, the Republican members of Congress paid a price for that, clearly, from those states. But at the same time, it allowed a kind of redistribution of the tax burden away from some of the red states that vote Republican overwhelmingly and toward places like California.
And in fact, you had some on the left who, you know, might have supported otherwise ending the deductions for mortgage interest, for example, just because it may privilege homeowners over renters. So some interesting politics along those lines. So this is City Visions on Local Public Radio, 91.7 KALW, San Francisco, and on the web at KALW.org. Our guests tonight are Jared Huffman, Democratic congressman since 2013, and representing the 2nd Congressional District, stretching from Marin to the Oregon border, and Eric Schickler, McDermott Professor of Political Science at UC Berkeley, who specializes in Congress. So we invite you to call in with questions or comments, and the phone lines are open now. The number to call to join this conversation is 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. You can also email or text us at cityvisions@kalw.org or post a comment on kalw.org or on our Facebook page. You can also reach us on Twitter by using @cityvisionskalw. So we have another email question in from Susie in San Francisco, who asks, do you think that some freshman lawmakers will not coalesce around Nancy Pelosi, going back to that issue? Will they be as hard to corral as the Tea Party was? So, Professor Schickler, let me start with you on that one. Do you anticipate a similar dynamic where there's a much more aggressive kind of left-wing new members coming in that could make governing the coalition and the caucus harder for someone like Nancy Pelosi, assuming she's Speaker?
I think as a general matter, the Democrats who come in, mostly the newer members who come in from the left, for the most part, will not be as big a problem for Speaker Pelosi as many are anticipating, in part because they're really pushing her hard to move in a direction that she mostly wants to move in anyway. So, for example, a lot was made out of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez leading a protest on climate change. And really what she's pushing for is the kind of strong action that Pelosi herself favors. So I think it's, in effect, these younger members providing grassroots energy for a Democratic agenda. There are a small number of members, though, elected from conservative districts who, to get elected, took a position saying that they weren't going to vote for Speaker Pelosi. These are the more moderate or moderately conservative members. And I think some of those members may end up not voting for her for Speaker, but I think in the end that's very unlikely to be enough to deprive her of the speakership.
And Congressman Huffman, based on your interactions with this incoming class, do you anticipate some Tea Party-like dynamics at all?
I think the professor just gave a really good analysis of what's likely to happen. There will be some votes against Leader Pelosi because of very specific commitments made by some people on the campaign trail and because of certain congressional districts and political dynamics there. But she's going to get her votes, and she's going to be the next speaker. To me, the real question is, how far does this opposition effort go? How much drama does it create? And does it send the message going forward into the new Congress that if you can gather 20 people together, you can complicate every big vote? And then you begin to actually have a Tea Party-like dynamic or a Freedom Caucus-like dynamic that will become an obstacle at key moments in the next Congress. So believe me, we're talking about that internally as a caucus. We're talking about how we don't want to repeat the mistakes of the Republican majority and become dysfunctional in the way they did.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's good to learn lessons, I suppose, from your political rivals. I also want to bring up another issue, Congressman Huffman, you brought up towards the top of the show, which is immigration, and you mentioned that was going to be one of the priorities. So what exactly can Congress do to protect the Dreamers, those who were brought to this country as children but have really only known the U.S. as a nation in many cases? So is there any possibility of reining in what the Trump administration has done in terms of rolling back protections for Dreamers?
Absolutely. I mentioned that big comprehensive immigration reform is probably not in the cards given this administration, but DACA protection and some type of Dream Act should be. Even President Trump has left room for something there. It's popular throughout the country. There was bipartisan support, frankly, in the last Congress for taking that step, and I think it's going to pass. It's certainly out of the House, and I feel fairly confident we can get it to the president's desk at that point. The political pressure on him is going to be tremendous, and I'll hope that he does the right thing.
And also on a related issue, the policy of family separation at the border, is there something that the House can do to challenge that particular policy?
Absolutely. We can use the power of the purse, and we can use oversight, and we can spotlight some of these outrages in ways that you didn't see the Republican Congress showing interest in doing.
And Professor Schickler, same question for you on immigration. What do you expect to see coming out of this Congress?
So first, I want to agree with the point about family separation, that that's the kind of issue that shining the spotlight of oversight and then also using the power of the purse through appropriations where you can essentially, you know, restrict agencies from taking certain actions. I think that that's should clearly be a priority for Democrats. On immigration reform and DACA, I think there's no question Democrats should be able to and will pass a bill through the House. I think it's actually going to be quite hard to get the Senate and the president to go along because essentially I think what President Trump seems to have decided is that, you know, when push comes to shove, taking this sharply anti-immigration stand is what his base wants him to do, and he gets rewarded for it. And I think many Republicans in the Senate, quite possibly enough to block action, are going to also take that stand. So I think it's going to be a hard pull to actually get it enacted. But I think there's no question Democrats need to lay out a clear legislative vision on this, pass it through the House, and then push as hard as they can to get it through the Senate.
And on another hotbed issue that also brought up at the top of the show, health care, which was, I think, a major part of the policy plank that Democratic candidates put forward. What can actually be done now, given that we've seen the Affordable Care Act stripped of the mandate, the individual mandate to have to purchase health care? You also have the administration gutting support for promoting things like the coverage period that is about to expire on December 15th for those who don't have health care and can sign up through the exchanges. So what realistically could be done on health care? And Congressman Huffman, let me start with you on that.
Well, I think at the low ambition end of the spectrum, at a minimum, you can end the sabotaging of the Affordable Care Act. You mentioned a few ways in which the Trump administration has tried to do that. You can use the power of the purse to absolutely require that they advertise as they're supposed to during open enrollment periods. And we can restore some of the subsidies that he's put at risk. We can restrict some of these junk plans that he has seemed to embrace to undermine the quality of care out there. At the higher end of ambition, you might begin to pass bills that include a public option on the exchanges, possibly even using Medicare or Medicaid as an optional product that people could buy into on the exchanges. You may include early buy-in to Medicare, which is something I'm very excited about as a step toward universal coverage. We're probably not yet at the point where we're ready to pass Medicare for All, even though I think it's just inevitable that the United States will get there. But some of these actions that I'm describing, I think, could represent incremental steps toward that.
And Professor Schickler, same question for you on the topic of health care, what you foresee potentially happening in this new Congress.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. I guess I'd add the issue of drug prices, where, you know, that's one issue where President Trump has kind of departed some from his party in terms of talking about some limited moves to restrict the practices of the drug manufacturers. And at least there's the possibility maybe for some action in the House where along those lines. But the more ambitious legislation, I think what, you know, if I were thinking strategically for the Democrats, what I would really try to do is think hard about what is the bill that we want to get passed in 2021 if we were to have unified control, and to do everything you can to lay the groundwork for that in terms of hearings and getting at least initial legislation through committee and as far into the process as possible so they could hit the ground running if they were to regain control in a couple years.
So definitely a bunch to talk about in terms of thinking about beyond this congressional term, which I want to spend the last few minutes of the show talking about. But first, I want to let people know this is City Visions on local public radio, 91.7 KALW San Francisco, and on the web at KALW.org. We're talking about the next Congress and what the prospects are for with a new Democratic House majority in the U.S. House. Guests tonight include Representative Jared Huffman from the 2nd Congressional District from Marin County up to the Oregon border, and Eric Schickler, McDermott Professor of Political Science at UC Berkeley, specializing in Congress. And earlier we were joined by Congresswoman Anna Eshoo, representing the 18th Congressional District in the South Bay, part of the Bay Area. The number to call to join this conversation in our final few minutes here is 1-866-798-8255. That's 866-798-TALK. You can also email or text us at cityvisions@kalw.org or post a comment on kalw.org or on our Facebook page. You can also reach us on Twitter by using @cityvisionskalw. So we have an email question from a listener who asks, what is the political price of cooperation? Are the presumably Democrats here giving Trump a win, and should they block him in the same way that Republicans tried to block Obama? Congressman Huffman, do you want to respond to that listener comment?
Well, I happen to believe that as much as we need to resist and oppose Donald Trump every time he tries to compromise our core values, if we can do things that solve problems for the American people, we have an obligation to try to do that too. And so I'm not an absolutist. I'm not a Mitch McConnell of the left that believes we've got to make every day a bad day legislatively and deny all victories to Donald Trump. We're going to have enormous historic differences with Donald Trump. But if in the course of holding him to account and holding him to the rule of law, we can also pass an infrastructure package, we can also reduce prescription drug prices and do a few other good things, I think we owe it to the American people to do it.
All right. Well, we definitely won't confuse you with Mitch McConnell. So just to just to clarify on that, let's go to the phone lines. We have Joe calling in. So, Joe, welcome to City Visions.
Well, thank you for taking my call. I have a question here. The congresspeople themselves, there aren't enough women as the congresspeople, and there aren't enough in the Senate. And it's been unfair for women as well as people of color all through the hundreds of years that this country has been a country. Do you foresee somewhere down the road where it might be mandatory or a requirement that at least 50% of the Senate and the Congress be a female persuasion? Because it's been so unfair, and it's not really a fair country or politics to have such small numbers in the Senate and Congress. What's your opinion on that? Do you see a change somewhere down the road?
All right, Joe, thank you for that question. Let me hand that one over first to Professor Schickler. What's your response to the prospect of bringing more women, people of color, into Congress and potentially mandating it?
Well, I think that this particular Congress has seen a real increase in the number of women and women of color. And what's striking, though, is the extent to which it's been concentrated in one party among Democrats. So there are actually fewer female Republicans in Congress than there were before, but a big increase on the Democratic side. And so I think and we're likely to see, and we are already seeing, a number of women moving into prominent leadership positions in the Democratic Party beyond Speaker Pelosi. And so I think there is a shift underway. It is true there are countries that do mandate quotas and have been much more successful at increasing representation of women than the U.S. has. I think, though, at least in the short to medium term, continued encouragement of women to run and recruitment of female candidates could certainly continue the trend in the right direction that we're seeing, at least within the Democratic Party. The problem of what's happening with the Republican Party, though, I think is a much deeper one.
And Congressman Huffman, what are your thoughts about increasing diversity in Congress?
Well, a couple thoughts. First, I think the mechanism for mandating some kind of a formula is complicated in our system of government. This is not a parliamentary system where people vote for the parties and then the parties kind of would be able to implement formulas like that. We vote for the person, and so it's just inherently a little more complicated to actually do something like that. But I would also invite folks to look at the difference right now between the next Democratic caucus in the House of Representatives and the Republican caucus. The Republican caucus got whiter and more male. The Democratic caucus continues to get incredibly diverse. I am a minority in the Democratic caucus as a straight white male. Our caucus really does reflect the diversity of this country, and more so each election cycle. So at least on our side of the aisle, the desire for diversity, I think, is being realized.
So, Congressman Huffman, I wanted to turn to an issue that's, I think, on a lot of people's minds, given the terrible fires up in Butte County. And, of course, we're now relying on the Trump administration to have to come in with a emergency response effort and try to help out the people affected by those devastating wildfires up there. Of course, we know there's a fraught relationship between California and Washington, D.C., specifically with the Trump administration. What are you seeing in terms of the executive branch response with FEMA to the campfire up in Butte County? And do you think that politics is affecting that at all?
I have no reason to believe politics is at play here. And I say that from my observations this year with the campfire and the car fire, but also over a year ago, the North Bay fires ripped through my district. And I am as fierce a critic of Donald Trump as you will find in the United States Congress. But I will tell you that I and my colleagues, Mike Thompson, and our colleagues in state government, local government, worked seamlessly with FEMA and the Department of Homeland Security and other federal agencies to provide the relief and the support that was called for. So it's frankly been a refreshing example of nonpartisanship and of government functionality in a crisis. And I have no reason to believe politics is at play.
All right. Well, that's reassuring. We've got just time for one more question to each of you. And that is, do you see the 2020 election that's kind of be hovering over this next congressional term affecting the types of issues that Democrats in particular are going to prioritize? So quickly to you, Congressman Huffman, and then I'll give Eric Schickler a chance to weigh in.
Well, I think part of that may depend on how quickly all of this comes down around Donald Trump. If Donald Trump is still the president in 2020 and we're still wrestling with all of this drama, I think that's one scenario that will shape what voters are looking for and what candidates come forward, what they say. If Donald Trump implodes, and I happen to believe that this is going to come down a little faster than most people anticipate, I believe not too far into the next year we may not have a President Donald Trump. Then I think that, too, may shape the field and what voters are looking for. And it may well be that voters want an end to the drama, and they really want someone to unify and bring us together and heal our divisions. So we're just going to have to see how long this, I believe, implosion of the Trump presidency takes.
All right. And Professor Schickler, last word to you.
Well, I think that 2020 is going to inevitably be a big factor shaping what we see over the next 2 years. But I think that Democrats in the House should really think of that not as an excuse not to take action in waiting for 2020, but to really try to use the next 2 years to push the kind of agenda that Democrats could rally around for the 2020 campaign and then beyond if they were to succeed in winning the White House and winning back the Senate.
All right. Well, we're going to have to leave it there. That's City Visions for this evening. Our guests tonight were Congressman Jared Huffman from the 2nd Congressional District. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having us.
And we're also pleased to have been joined by Eric Schickler, McDermott Professor of Political Science at Cal Berkeley. Thank you.
Thanks, Ethan.
And, of course, earlier we were joined by Congresswoman Anna Eshoo, Democratic Congresswoman from the 18th Congressional District. We want to thank all of you for joining us, and for a link to this and other City Vision shows to let us know what you thought about tonight's program, and to subscribe to alerts and download podcasts, visit the City Visions page on KALW.org. Our engineer this evening was David LaTulipe, and tonight's show was produced by Grace Wan. Join us next week as we discuss the California State Assembly's 2019 agenda and our little mini-series here on what to expect next year in politics. This is Ethan Elkind. Thanks so much for listening. Good night, and have a great rest of your week.